Hello, this is Michelle Weston with Wellness Learning Curves 2.0, Radio 360 Talk Radio for Women. So glad to be with you this morning. I am bringing back one of my favorite people, and that is Cindy Acree. Acree? Okay, I'm checking. Cindy, who is a NP. She's going to give you all her titles, but once she gives you her titles, what we're going to talk about today is something that both she and I hold degrees in, in how to advocate for the patient from different points of view. We're going to talk about it. And when you have a chronic condition, you know, sometimes you really need more advocates than you think you do. And we're different kinds of advocates. And we want you to know it's not just having an advocate isn't just about, oh my God, this person's bedridden, this person, you know, is having surgery. Advocates are used all the time. So we're going to talk about that a bit, because even though both Cindy and I are coaches, we coach people in regards to health and wellness and so forth. Advocating sort of runs in both of our bloods to make sure that everybody gets a fair hearing, that they're heard, and that they're able to be compliant, because it's really hard to be compliant when you don't even understand what the heck the doctor is saying. So on that note, Cindy, how are you today?
Oh, thank you, Michelle. I'm doing well. Thank you. I am a person that has grown up in healthcare. I have been a nurse for more than 30 years.
Wow.
Education has been very high. Credentials are very important in the healthcare field.
Very much so. And you have to keep getting your CEUs, your continuing education.
Everything's certified. Everything is, you know, you just continue to keep up. And it's important. Luckily, I'm a free agent learner, so I don't depend on anyone to pay for my training. And I love learning. That's one of my strengths.
Yes, very much so.
Knowledge, creativity, those types of things. So in nursing, we are taught to advocate for the patient. So we work on problem solving. We work on, you know, social determinants, you know, if it's money, if it's transportation, any of those types of things. We work until our patient aspirations, outcomes are met.
Which is the best type of nurse. So if you're meeting neonatal in Cincinnati, Ohio, check with Cindy.
Yes. My patient population has been these little, you know, as low as, you know, 1.5 pounds, 2 pounds babies, and just advocating for their environment to be as much like the internal uterine environment, quiet and soothing, that they would be growing up in, and try to minimize side effects and those types of things. So, so I've been, you know, a nurse advocate the whole time. And I look at advocacy as making sure that people's views and thoughts and concerns are addressed, as well as advocating for people's rights.
Very much so.
Yes.
Very much so.
I've been a longtime advocate. I even was asked to be the co-chair of the National Neonatal Nurse and Nurse Practitioner Organization, that they needed a health policy and advocacy co-chair. So I was able to do that. And I advocated in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
The FDA. They, you know, take BPA out of water bottles for adults, but they don't take it out for the bottles for babies.
Which is the weirdest friggin' thing.
Exactly.
Which part of the corporations, is that just laziness or just, oh, that would create more work to actually look and make sure it's BPA free?
Well, I think it's follow the money as always.
Oh, always. Yeah. Forgot. And I'm sorry.
in our society, the children and the elders are not held in high esteem. Gen Zs, the millennials, the ones that are spending the money, making the, you know, plans, doing the action.
It's the capitalist kind of moments in our lives, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
So I've always been, you know, fight, you know, for what's right. You know, that's one of my definitions of a leader is doing what is right. So as nurses, we're leaders and we do what's right. Some nurses, however, have a different point of view coming through school. So you might not have that strong of an advocate your first go round. And not all doctors are advocates. So you might have to, you know, work and figure out who is your best advocate for your aspirations and outcomes and questions to be answered, those types of things to happen. Mm-hmm.
And there's advocates at hospitals that are hired. They're called patient advocates. Some hospitals are great with their patient advocates. In fact, for me, the best one here in New York to watch probably is, and to hope that they're on my side, actually, is New York Presbyterian, Weill Cornell. When you're in ER at New York Presbyterian, I've been with patients in ER advocating for them. They have a very strong ethics there, because the woman who created the patient advocacy program there was actually taught, was a nurse, and also had done the Sarah Lawrence College master's program in patient advocacy, which was really one of the first programs out. So she had this idea of what this looked like, being a nurse and also having been through patient advocacy, which is, as Cindy was saying, I came to it through bioethics, health policy, public health, which helps a lot because understanding the social determinants of health, which means a lot of things, guys. It means where you fall in salary. It's also where you fall in your healthcare. We know that, you know, Cindy's been talking about neonatal. Well, how about we still, and every once in a while it creeps up to the front page of the news. Did you know that African-American women and Hispanic women, women of color are treated so poorly when, especially by the time they come to delivery in a hospital? And I'm still working on this, okay? Nobody should be affronted, but I thought vaginas were vaginas. So I didn't know that if they had a different color, you delivered the baby differently. Did you know that, Cindy?
Well, there is. People are people. You know,
that's what it is. That's what I thought. And so when I started to hear, and that, my goodness, you know, you waiting longer, thinking there's this weird, like hundreds of years old, but I still don't care, theory, I showed up at Tuskegee, that African-American people can bear more pain. They don't need as much pain management. Really?
Well, unclear where those thoughts came from. Even Serena Williams almost died when she had her daughter. Mm-hmm.
Serena Williams. Yes. Top tennis player, loved around the world.
Top physical condition.
Yeah. Top hospital, top doctors. What the heck? What the heck happened that they thought that delivering a African-American woman's child would be any easier or harder? I'm going to go there. Easier or harder? Delivering a baby is a big deal. Like, I think we're pretty much, you know, on the top of the top 10 things in this lifetime is women. I do. That we can do that, that we can hold on for 9-10 months, deliver a kid.
Yeah. Having a baby and breastfeeding are the most difficult things a woman's body can do. Growing a new human being and then producing nutrition.
Yep. And, you know, and
we just keep on going. Yeah.
Right. And it's just, and advocating for that and making sure is so important. And I don't say this for those of you out there with chronic conditions to scare you. I'm just giving you the reality. This is what the picture looks like. So when you come up against a challenge, it probably is most of the time a challenge, you know, and that doesn't mean that it's not something that can't be resolved, but there's challenges. You know, healthcare today is more difficult. It's more difficult to get things approved. I have a new health insurance company, and oh my goodness, we know that I have MS for 24 years. They're not going to approve IVIG to keep my blood cells up once a month. I've been doing this for like 10 years. Really? You're not going to do that because you don't think I need them. You don't think I need them. The paper person. And understand also, again, in insurance advocates, they also, they could be from a different department. So I could have a neurology question, and somebody from orthopedic, like an orthopedic surgeon, is the head of making decisions on who gets certain tests and certain procedures and certain treatments. And you're just like, how does that get there? How does that happen? So I'm still working on that. You know, you have to, and then you have to have an unbelievable team to advocate for you in your doctor's office. So they have to go fight the fight. They have to find all the paperwork. They have to send it into the health insurance companies and make sure that we get what we need. So you'd be surprised how many people around you are advocating for you, even though sometimes I know a number of us would say, nobody advocates for me. Well, I'm going to come back to this, right, Cindy? You should be advocating for you as well.
Absolutely.
Right? Yep. So how would you explain when you're with a patient, even though they may be really little? So let's think of other nurses. How do you handle the mom, or how do you handle it? Listen, you've been an amazing caregiver with your sister right now. You know, your sister has needed help and you've been running around helping her, which is pretty impressive. When we have to help somebody in our family, of course we're going to help them, but it's also learning how to do that dance with them and getting through their doctors and so forth too. I mean, you know, she can be a top neonatal nurse and now retired, but when she's in different settings, she also has to like put on her other hat, right, Cindy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how do you find you use advocacy when you're with your sister, being the caregiver, being, you know, the family member?
Well, I advocate for her health and well-being. I'm trying to get her off of her medicines, off of, you know, out of this assisted living situation. In care.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically, use the skills of the nonviolent communication. I think that's Goldsmith. It's a book available on Amazon, but it's an observation. You know, I observed that, you know, she's had a seizure, and then I feel very frightened and I need someone to help her. And I'm requesting you to talk to the doctor, to have the doctor talk to me. So you know, do an observation, you explain how you feel, you request what you need, and then you make a request. You ask for what you need, and then you make a request. So I have done this and not heard good responses. So I have gone to higher authorities. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, reported things to, I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio, the Ohio Board of Nursing, the Ohio Department of Health, the Ohio Attorney General, the Ohio Board of Pharmacy, to figure out what is going on that our elders are not getting good care.
It's amazing. And
what is going on with my sister, you know, not getting her medicine, not, you know, having therapies done, not, you know, it's like, what's up? I just asked the question in a kind way, that nonviolent communication of, you know, what's, and just basically, you know, what's going on. So you're not like, being, you know, nay, why did you do this? You know,
yeah, being a complainer.
Yeah, not being a complainer. It's a more of a simplistic, non-threatening type of communication to investigate, to get the narrative of what's going on.
Yeah, and the narrative is important. I talk about the narrative. The narrative of the patient is important. And I've said before, the narrative of the nurse, the narrative of the healthcare team is also part of that. We as healthcare team members have a narrative. We want the best for you. We may have been through this with somebody else that we loved. So we know this walk, and we really want to understand where somebody's coming from. That's really important, because everybody has a story. Everybody has a background. If you're dealing with people from the Caribbean, if you're dealing with people from Asia, there are certain things that they always did when they have an illness. So they'll try certain herbs, they'll try certain behaviors, drinking this, blah, 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 blah. We have to know that. So we have to be curious and we have to ask without judgment. So what do you do when you get a headache or when you have stomach problems? Because we don't know if that's going to knock into the medications that are coming from the healthcare side, the healthcare teams in the hospitals and the offices to make sure that, you know, if you're using some herb, it's not going to knock into a medication. So we want to keep you safe too. Advocates also want you to understand that advocating for yourself is also helping you be safe and be heard. What's happened with your sister that, you know, people experience that when you're put on medications, sometimes we're over-medicated, sometimes we're under-medicated, or as you said, is it being done consistently? Is, you know, your dosage being given at the same time every day, approximately, let's like work within the hour or so, because that isn't always how it goes. And we want to help you advocate for keeping things on time so you don't have to get to that point where you have to like ask for more pain meds. Who the heck wants to do that? Nobody really wants to ask for more pain meds because nobody, I mean, Cindy, do you think anyone would want to be in that much pain that they would want more pain meds?
If they're undertreated, I could see possibly, or if they're not treated correctly, or the combination of medication is not correctly. But there's a whole host of non-pharmaceutical or non-pain, non-drug, you know, things that individuals, you know, can do. But Michelle, you bring up an excellent point. That's one of my hot buttons, if you'd want to say, about medications.
Yep.
People need to write down the names. A real name, and then they have the marketing name and they have the generic name. And what is that being used for? And what is the mechanism of action? What is the intended outcome this person prescribing is going for? Then the side effects and know what those are. And if you have some, then tell your provider.
Don't ignore them. If something feels weird, don't go crazy. Don't read that little piece of paper in there for all the contraindications and go insane. Please don't.
Right. I run into, so it's very important for people to understand what their medications are, what they're for, what's the side effects, when do I call you? You're not supposed to be miserable as a result of taking medication.
Absolutely.
And then get into taking medications to offset the side effects of the medications. Mm-hmm. I had a friend whose son had a organ transplant and he was having terrible diarrhea. And, you know, she's like, well, I put him on the brat diet, you know, what you use for toddlers, you know, bread, rice, applesauce, and toast.
It's also good for diverticulitis patients.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's good for any kind of GI, you know, upsettedness. I said, you know, have you thought about talking to the doctor and looking at the medications? Because when people have organ transplants, it's a major work against Mother Nature project to not get this organ rejected because the body the immune system's always on high alert. This is foreign. Let's get rid of it. It doesn't belong here. And I couldn't believe that her son had gone probably a month. He had lost so much weight. They talked to their doctor. She's talking to me as a friend. And I'm like, you know, get back there and work on his medications.
Yeah.
So medications aren't meant to make you miserable.
No, they're not supposed to.
So, but just make sure you know what you're taking, what it's for. And so sometimes they will use medications. It's called off-label.
Yes,
so
I use that. Yes.
They find that medications work in other areas.
So rituximab, which is a cancer medicine, works very well on patients with MS, with RRMS. And it also, they've been using it for, God, at least 20 years, at least off-label. And it also is great for people with Wegener's granulomatosis, which has a new name and I keep forgetting it. But you'd be surprised. Now, off-label is a good thing when it's used correctly and has its boundaries and parameters and the doctors know how they're using it. But yes, but Cindy, what happens when it's off-label and we're not sure about everything that may bother a patient?
Well, bad things will happen. Like look at the example of the GPL-1s, the and the Ozempic and
Wegovy and
name it for weight loss. People are having nausea. They're having intestinal blockage. I mean, the list
growing up
on and on and on. And, but big pharma, the pharmaceutical industry, they make so much money. During the COVID, the new billionaires were the new were the presidents of Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, and Pfizer. So it's all about money, money, money. So you see all these, you know, commercials. When you see MAB at the end of the generic name for the medication, that's a monoclonal antibody.
Okay.
They have engineered a way to block Mother Nature.
Wow.
It's,
so explain that some more. Monoclonal antibodies.
Yeah. It's the it's specifically designed to block Mother Nature's response to fill in the blank.
Right.
Inflammation or and our bodies are programmed for survival and health and well-being. Mm-hmm. You know, the toxins build up.
We get rid of them.
So our bodies are still trying to, you know, and oftentimes when people, you know, get to such, you know, awful, you know, debilitating chronic illness, the body has just given out. It can't do anymore. You know, so it's, that's what causes the dis-ease is your body's been trying. You need to help it. You don't, you're not aware. You're not able. You don't have the wherewithal to help it. So therefore it, you know, the toxins build up and you get the disease. And then, but now the scientists, well, this is what happens in America. People think they can just get a new knee or a new hip or, you know, whatever, just, you know, run your body into the ground, you know,
your and then temple. Just get new pieces.
Yeah. And get new pieces. However, good luck. Healthcare is so backed up. And then the side effects and the cost and all that type of stuff. So it's very interesting, but all these new drugs are so expensive because they've had to pay research and developers, the scientists, to figure out how to outsmart Mother Nature.
So, isn't that bizarre? I'm still, can you explain to me how all these people are getting, I'm not talking about the ones that are like doing semi-glutide at the infusion, these new like infusion places where you get like B12. I'm sorry. For me, step away from that because I'm sorry, unless it's being done in a doctor's office or in a hospital managed like iron, like B12, all of those things, I'm going to have a tendency to walk away from it. That doesn't mean there's not doctors that are doing that. I've been to amazing integrative centers, but there's doctors and nurses there right there who are giving that to the patient. So I've got advocates and I've got, you know, parameters of knowing that people are watching me with it, watching you with your medication. But this whole Wegovy, you know, Ozempic thing, it's like at least $1,000 a month. How do they get their doctors to write this script and then bring it to the pharmacy, which has to then fill it, but fill it for $1,000 because insurance isn't going to pay anything?
Well, Michelle, I haven't had any personal experience because I refused to go that direction. It's a game. I don't really know exactly how they're doing it, but some people will invest that money to lose weight. They will invest that money to have the fat cells sucked out or, you know.
And now they do this weird thing where they suck out fat cells out of your cheeks. You get,
yeah.
I mean, people, who the heck?
People will, you know, pay the money, you know, and $1,000 a month. Well, if they've got the resources and losing weight's that important that they're going to risk their health and risk all the side effects, which are going to be much worse. I mean, obesity has its own, you know, health implications and negative, you know, consequences.
Yep. Yep.
However, when you're messing with Mother Nature and taking a medicine that you don't have diabetes and it's intended for the mechanism of action to, you know, control your blood sugar.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're working with a team that knows this, there's many people who have bariatric surgery who go into the surgery with diabetes too. Mm-hmm. And they are insulin resistant. Mm-hmm. And we know that. And they actually sometimes, because this is a disease, this is a issue, they need a assistance with that. That's why when they start to use Ozempic on patients who had bariatric surgery and suddenly we saw a gain of 15 pounds, 20 pounds, and also the A1C numbers shot up. That's why that actually went off label first. And then, of course, everyone went, oh, well, these people are taking it and they don't have diabetes, but I could take it and I could lose weight too. It's just a very, and now I've been told, which it just makes me laugh. Somebody told me, you know, Oprah's been great, but Oprah bought Weight Watchers. Okay. She bought Weight Watchers mm-hmm. years ago and she's done some great things with it. I still think Weight Watchers is a great program, you know, hands down. They've got their, you know, they've got their ducks in order, honestly, and they keep up with what we need to continue to do. But what's also really interesting to me is now I've been told, and I have to do some homework, Weight Watchers has a diet, a food plan, if you're on one of the Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro. Yeah. And then somebody said, well, Oprah's been fired by Weight Watchers. And I just sort of laughed the other night. I said, no, you can't really fire Oprah from Weight Watchers because she owns it. she owns it. And they sort of like said, no, she doesn't. I said, yeah, she bought it to help all of us, not just her. And she's done very well in turning around and getting it into a better space. But there you go. There's just mm-hmm. some interesting handlings of things. And she's been on, you know, she was on television talking about it last week, a couple of weeks ago, because people don't understand how these drugs got into this category in the way they did. They were created for people who have diabetes 2, insulin resistance. Your blood sugar goes up and down. It goes into places it shouldn't be. That's who it was created for, to help curb their desire for sugar and also to help the numbers stay in a better place. You know, we go to all lengths to become thin, especially in the United States, right?
Absolutely. But it's not healthy for the long run. The goal is longevity and being healthy with longevity.
With quality of life. That's why we, you hear us, you'll see QOL, quality of life. That's what we're talking. We always want quality of life. We don't want to ever have to. Yeah.
Care facility, nursing home, any of that type stuff.
Mm-hmm. Because we want to make sure that people are well. So when you're advocating for yourself, what are some things that you find are helpful that you may have used for yourself or that you've seen help others when advocating in regards to any good tips or strategies for questions or anything going to a doctor's office or getting ready for surgery or, you know, dealing with the pharmacy? What have you found anything that you use that are good tips and strategies?
Well, I think the quality of the question that you're asking the person that's going to be doing whatever, help me to understand. Kind of people like to help. So one of the things that I use just in getting people's names, because I get all these surveys and I always want to say, well, Rob did a great job as a game master at the Legoland. You know, I want to give people credit because they do, you know, good work. So I, you know, help me with your name. Instead of what's your name, you know, help me with your first name. So just being very soft and gentle, and people like to help. So if you phrase your question in a way to have them help you, help me to understand, help me to figure this out, help me with resources. People are more amenable, it seems, mm-hmm. because you're not really accusatory or blaming or, you know, feeling, you know, entitled, mm-hmm. just asking for their help. And then hopefully they will, or if you don't know the answer, can you send me to someone that does. And if someone says, well, I'll get back with you, we'll find a time. When can I expect a return email or to this question? And people are very busy. So it's not that you're being pesky. It's you want to get your questions answered and you want to, you know, feel comfortable with the plan of care or what's going to be, you know, in your future.
And as you hear these questions, you guys, seriously, I just wrote some down that Cindy has said, because we're always looking for better language to ask questions with. We are taught
words create worlds.
Words create worlds. And we definitely, in coaching, it's very important. That's why I said before, be curious and be non-judgmental. You know, everybody doesn't know everybody's situation. They don't. And even if they think they know their situation and they may have had something like that, to ask curiously, to ask honestly. So how do you feel about this? Gives the person a lot of room, and it also bolsters them to have been asked genuinely. So how have you handled this? I didn't tell them how I think they should handle it, or I didn't tell them what they did wrong. I said, how do you handle this? Because you don't know what gems you may get from somebody.
Absolutely. With my sister, I got a call from her assisted living. She had a purple finger. She had Dupuytren's contracture, which is the fascia, the connective tissue, and her little finger was, you know, shortened and more towards her palm. She must have gotten a cod in the bed linens or whatever. So we go get it x-rayed, splinted. I said, could you please give me a hand specialist referral so I can, you know, get this taken care of? Go to this young doctor. After, you know, a few months, everything's healed and everything went well for her. Thank goodness. We've got good genes. And I said, now, as far as correction, you know, he explained the enzyme that they use that they're advertising now to not have surgery. And I'm not saying, you know, everybody does their own thing for their own thing, but my quality of questions, excuse me, you know, there's an enzyme you can inject and then it breaks down the fascia connective tissue and then they pull out the finger and straighten it out and then you do physical therapy
They
can come in and do surgery.
Prefer to try number one first.
Well, that's just it. I said, now tell me this, if this was your mother, what might you do? Now, we in healthcare are not allowed to say, well, I would do X, Y, and Z. However, you know, if this was your mother.
We can give you some examples.
Yeah, so, exactly. Just kind of, you know, instead of outright asking, well, help me with this. You know, if this was your mother. So this young doctor says, well, when I first got out of practice, I did use the injections. However, they're banned in Canada. I don't use them anymore. I said, okay, no, that's all I needed. We'll schedule surgery. Thank you very much. So,
wow.
Yeah, so that's all I needed. It's like, you know, if this was your mother, you know, what would you do? So just querying and tell, why would I go with this, something that's been, you know, banned in Canada, something that people aren't using, big pharma keeps pushing it.
Yeah.
And it might be the best for some people. I'm not being judgmental.
Oh, no. But,
you know, it's like, so just figuring out what works best for you, because I want her to have a, you know, straightened out finger, and I want her to be able to, you know, play the piano and guitar, you know, no problems. And I felt good in my interaction with this young physician because I was able to get exactly what I was looking for. What can we do? One time, one and done, no side effects, better long-term outcomes, and, you know, go from there.
And that's important. You know, that's absolutely. When we are being curious, asking a question, not demanding a question, saying, what's your experience with this? It's nice to hear other points of view. Mm-hmm. It's nice to hear, oh, so Canada has banned that now. Why? Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, you know, Canada does its due diligence like America does. We're a little more rigid over here with the FDA and the CDC and the NIH. Not to throw out some initials of places, but we're 50 odd states, and we feel it's very important to make sure we do our due diligence. Yeah. And sometimes it takes longer than we want it to. And then there's things like sometimes it takes too short. We're still out on Ozempic and all of those drugs. Sorry to go back to that. But there's fallout from that. They're now finding that there's muscle loss.
Awful.
And so what are we going to do about that muscle loss? Like, what's going to happen with that? How do we reverse that? How do we redirect that? And why are we going to make it so that people who have obesity have a diagnosis, okay? They have a chronic condition diagnosis. If somebody has gone through bariatric surgery and they have kept weight off over 100 pounds, so forth, for a number of years, and suddenly in their brains, you and I, Cindy, if I discussed this, there's ghrelin and there is leptin. There are two hormones in our brains. Actually, they're in here, in the chest. When those hormones get thrown off and the switches get reversed, they just flip. That person who had surgery and lost all that weight and had struggled with weight for a long time and now was managing it with, you know, modification and so forth, what happens when that stops working, when your brain starts to tell that person all the time, I'm hungry, I'm hungry, when they know, no, I'm not hungry. What just happened? Why am I getting this message incorrectly? Now, those people who were taking it off-label but could have used it before are having the challenge of, no, you can't have it. We're not giving it to you unless you have diabetes too. And you have to prove it over 6 months of A1C levels. Off-label is good as long as it, again, has parameters. Everything needs to be looked at, studied. And when we start to see a challenge like muscle loss and so forth, we have to then slow our butts down and go, what's going on? Right?
Absolutely.
I heard there was a new medication out, Perma something. It's an hour-long infusion for COVID-19 for those who are really immunocompromised. It's new. It was in the New York Times the other day, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm sure none of my doctors are going to just let us just run towards that, but it'll be interesting to watch what happens with it, right?
Absolutely. So back to your dilemma of, you know, working on behavior, I follow BJ Fogg, who is a habits coach, and I'm one of his coaches.
Please talk about her. I love BJ Fogg. I love this whole thing that she created. It's really great.
BJ Fogg, he's a behavior design professor at Stanford University and came upon this combination of behavior equals motivation, ability, and prompts. So B equals MAP. So his suggestion for his model is, you know, have an anchor, have a routine, some type of routine. We have all kinds of routines. Then do your new behavior and then celebrate. So that's giving dopamine surge to your brain. And this is good. Let's repeat it. Now we're working on really picking up what he calls the pearl habit. And the pearl habit is where these sweet little clams get a piece of sand and they create the pearl. So this is creating new behaviors to avoid bad behaviors, or not as good behaviors, behaviors that aren't serving you. I hate to be judgmental on
saying. Yeah, you know, the words, we keep looking for like the perfect words. Yep.
Yes. So behaviors that don't serve you. So for me, I was in two rearing collisions when I was in my SUV and then the rental SUV, people not being distracted and running in the back of the SUV. Excuse me. So needless to say, I was okay. I, you know, got rehabilitated and non-pharmaceutical, got back to my usual marathoning, etc. However, for my pearl habit, whenever I see, my anchor is whenever I see all this backup of red lights with traffic stopped, instead of, oh my gosh, somebody's going to hit me, it's, oh, I'm going to appreciate it. One of my strengths is appreciating excellence and beauty. Oh, look at these lights. Look at this company and their beautiful lights. And, you know, the lights are just, you know, fabulous with all the different companies. So I just enjoy the, you know, different lights and I just take a deep breath and relax. And then I turn on some happy music. oftentimes I will take a side road. I know all the side roads, but
instead, service roads are very, very useful.
Exactly. But that's where I, you know, instead of freezing up and being, you know, panicked, oh my gosh, somebody's going to hit me again. It's, oh, look, we have a traffic jam. We have stopped traffic. And aren't these lights lovely? And maybe there's someplace else I can get off and have more of a leisurely drive. So when people have, you know, people can use this for all different things. And BJ Fogg has a book on Amazon. He has a tape. His book is written on tape on Audible. You can go to tinyhabits.com. There's all
Which
kinds
is great.
Of stuff. Yeah. And to work on things. But this might be when I get the craving for sweets or whatever the food group is that is not helping you, you know, within your food plan, maintain a
right.
healthy weight. When I get the craving for X, I will, and then your reward, you might have a cup of tea, you might celebrate. There's all kinds of ways to celebrate, but just getting into your brain that there's other things to do besides get, you know, this, you know,
put something in your mouth.
Exactly. Because he talks about there's nothing wrong with us as people. It's our behavior.
Absolutely.
Mind that needs work. So I love his attitude. And, you know, so the people that are working with the diets and the medications and those types of things, if only we could figure out a way to help them build on their Pearl habits, you know, for own self-care, advocating for yourself.
Yep.
And, you know, one of the things I do when I go to restaurants, you know, do you want this fabulous da 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 da? Oh, I have an allergy. They don't need to know that I break out in fat. Oh, an allergy. Oh, okay, well, we're not going to offer.
I love that. That's fabulous.
You know,
that's fabulous.
Or, you know, whatever. I'd say, you know, oh, I have an allergy. I can't take that. But, you know, and same with, you know, self time, you know, taking time. Somebody will ask you to do so. Oh, I'm sorry. I have a commitment. They don't need to know that you're
the whole blah, blah, blah.
Taking, you know, half an hour for meditation, you know, deep breathing, whatever type of, you know, self recharging you use throughout the day. They don't need to know that you have a commitment. No, I can't do X when, no, you ask. So,
and having boundaries and parameters is part of also advocating for yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's very important. Just looking at the boundaries, learning to say no when, you know, there's not enough resources or energy to, you know, do whatever.
And it, you know, those with chronic conditions, creating boundaries and parameters is a good thing.
Absolutely.
It is not selfish at all. It is making sure you get what you need to get the best lifestyle for you. Correct. Living with what you're living with.
Correct.
You know, lots of people don't understand when I say, family members don't understand. It's almost 24 years with MS. So if you ask me how I am, unless there's something big going on, seriously, and most of the time I actually don't even talk about symptoms or stuff, I'll just say I'm fine. And some people are like, well, what do you mean you're fine? You always say you're fine. I am fine. I'm not in a wheelchair. I'm not a walker. I'm not bedridden. I'm not using a cane. I'm fine. And sometimes that's just my way of handling. Things are copacetic. You know, do I still have to run to the bathroom at times because I have signals that don't always get where they're supposed to? And I get automatic signals like, you have to go now, which I really don't appreciate, but it's 20 odd years. So, that's just what it is. So you answer Mother Nature really fast.
Correct.
or else sometimes you have an accident and you can laugh or cry. And I pretty much always choose to laugh. Sometimes I swear, but I pretty much always laugh because just life is life and things happen.
Absolutely.
Right?
Well, there's one coach guru out there talking about fine being the new four-letter word.
Oh.
So you might
yes.
want to, yes, no. So I always respond, I'm striving to thrive despite the struggles. So this comes from one of my coaches, Michelle McQuaid, Dr. Michelle McQuaid.
She's
appreciative inquiry and positive change and creating well-being. And when we do like organizational assessments, people will plot out in the, you know, struggling, you know, not thriving at all to the thriving despite the struggles, you know, in the, like a four quadrant print, you know, diagram that you can give, you know, people, but we always, you know, say that. And people are like, wow, what does that mean? I go, well, if you work on trying to make the best of every day, be grateful, take care of yourself, you know, mm-hmm. good food plan, fluid, move, manage stress is huge. You know, you're just striving to thrive despite yep. all the bad stuff. Yep. You know, you get micro stressors all the time. You know, it's always.
Always, like, always. We always yeah. get things yeah. always negativity. Happen. Yeah. You know, it's just how life is and how we bounce back also changes our quality of life. Mm-hmm. To be able to just learn to sort of go with the flow. Sorry to say that, but seriously, yeah, is a good thing. It's a way to just manage yourself and take a second. You know, sometimes I'll come home and even from PT yesterday, I don't know why, but Monday was, you know, couple of weeks ago, I was really tired when I got to PT, and I'm working actually on a research study to get to help MS patients walk quicker, walk more fastidiously to really help us with our gait, especially those of us with drop foot. And I do this twice a week for 12 weeks. And what it will do is it will help others figure out how we can not be so guarded in regards to walking quicker. I didn't say faster. Mm-hmm. You could use faster. Quicker for me makes more sense, to walk more quickly, more efficiently, because we worry about balance and we worry about tripping, because in New York City, the sidewalks are not even, not all of them are even. Sometimes you get a lip of the next piece of cement and you're just like, thank you so much.
Yes. Well, I do fitness walking. I used to be a runner. And after back injury, I thought, well, I'm just going to do fitness walking. What we teach is we train people. If you see an obstruction, step on it. Don't worry about it. Just step on it and move on. That way you won't trip on it.
Right. See, and looking at that differently, I came to, you know, work with the students who are, you know, PT candidates, and I was tired. And they always use a scale, starts with a B, I can't remember, to just ask me how tired I am. Where am I? 6 to something. And, you know, I was surprised because I was in the double digits, even just in the teens, because I was tired. I said, this is just a tired morning. Or tired afternoon. Sometimes mm-hmm. that happens. Mm-hmm. I should remember, I have to remind them that they did this one at 4 o'clock, 3:45, 4 o'clock. For me, that window of 3:45, 4 o'clock is my rebooting window if I'm going to have to do anything. Rebooting is not doing 14 passes as quickly as I can. It's right. not. So the numbers were really low, but I learned something from that. It's like, that's why you really like doing this before 12, 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I just, it's easier for me, you know, and
your cortisol levels, your ability to respond to stress. Yeah. Yep. Ebb and flow.
Yep. And you have to learn to pay attention to your body so that you can help you. Honestly, I'm going back to this, have the best quality of life, making lifestyle changes. Mm-hmm. And I didn't say lifestyle, you know, lifestyle changes, lifestyle shifts, finding things like BJ Fogg, finding ways to use meditation. Not, it doesn't always have to be formally. You could take a walk in the park, as I say, just doing something to give yourself a chance to just reboot, reset, makes a difference.
Yeah. Out in nature is wonderful.
Yeah. And we don't, you know, we don't always take advantage of it. You know, I always giggle when I'm on Zoom with people. So Cindy on Zoom today has palm trees and the water behind her. I love it.
Yes, Michelle, I always have to have something out there to look forward to. So going down the Gulf Shores in June, celebrating the bonus granddaughter's graduation from college, and she's going to be a nurse.
Isn't that cool?
Yes, she wanted to do Gulf Shores for her high school graduation, but she graduated in 2020. So nothing was going on with the vid, you know, everything shut down thanks to COVID. So we thought, well, for college, we'll go down there. So I love the Caribbean. I love Hawaii, anything with, you know, nice ocean and palm trees and sunshine. And it's, you know, kind of, I wish I was there, but, you know, just looking at the background is.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And you get that feeling. Some people get that in outdoor setting of woods, of beautiful woods. I love when the leaves change.
Yeah, forest bathing. Mm-hmm. Mother Nature is there to take care of us. You know, Mother Earth, Mother Nature, just getting out, fresh air, sunshine.
Exactly. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. And it does. It refreshes us and it helps us reframe things. You know, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've used that word before on this show. You know, when I'm with a client patient and the doctor's explaining something to them, they want them to do something, some new step over the next 6 months. If I see those shoulders go up of a patient in front of me as I'm taking notes, I will ask the doctor to reframe what he or she is asking the patient to do, because I do believe most patients, I can't say all, would like to be compliant, would like to feel better. They don't always know how, and sometimes the language just isn't something that they're used to. So they walk away going, now how would I do that?
Well, that's just it, Michelle. The word compliance, both parties need to be clear.
On the same page.
On the same page, same song sheet, and agree upon what the plan is going to be. So many physicians will da 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 da. And then now they're getting paid based on metrics and outcomes, and they just can't understand why someone's not going to do something. However, if they had taken a few minutes to figure out the social determinants, you know, person's mindset, their ability, their motivations, their money, their, you know, geography, transportation, all the things, or what are the barriers? You know, it's like in coaching, we use that confidence ruler.
Yeah. Oh, we love the confidence.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you going to be able to do this walking, Mr. Smith? And he'll say maybe a 5. So that's a signal, if it's less than 7, that they're not going to do it. Well, Mr. Smith, what might be something that could change about the situation that could get you up to a 8 or a 9? Well, do you think you could do that? You know, just working and, you know, working with people to come up with the best, you know, why isn't your answer a 10? Well, so with this coaching, it's a getting into the subconscious, you know, just quick questions. And it's not devious or anything like hearing about. It's a matter of getting past the ego and getting into the subconscious. Well, what's in the way? What are the barriers? How can we work around them? And how can we get you to, you know, just try one little tiny habit of walking, you know, 10 feet. Well, then if you walk 10 feet, it's like, well, for goodness sakes, might as well do whatever the block is or the trail or, you know, whatever, you know, the person needs to accomplish, but you start small.
Yes.
So, running a marathon, you don't get up on the starting line and say, hey, I'm going to do a marathon today. No, you start in January preparing for May. So.
And that's important, you guys. That preparation is important. Why do we like coaching? Why do you like coaching coming from nursing? What do you find you enjoy in coaching that lets you tap into that part of you that's advocacy for someone to find better ways to function and do and live and be?
Well, Michelle, the coach knows that all the answers lie within. You are your own best resources for what's going to work and what's not going to work. Figuring out how to get that out of you. And with coaching, you're getting past the ego and all that critical voice and all the not so helpful, you know, things that go on in our brains. Get past that and you get remove barriers and you can actually have the individual realize that, hey, I could do this if X, Y, and Z. I could ask for some help. I could rearrange this. You know, all the possibilities are open.
Instead of I can't.
Exactly.
And my question again, as you've all heard from me out there listening, can't or won't? Because it sounds sometimes to me from people, I won't. If you can't see the opportunity to shift and to grow or to change, I won't be able to help you, because a won't is such a stopgap. It's like,
absolutely. It's a not very, you know, it's a negative mindset. You need a positive mindset. So changing that won't to a will and a can't to a can. I was doing some substitute teaching, just helping out the substitute teacher pool. And the school had this huge, you know, board as the children are coming down the stairs on the wall, actually, just changing one word. And they had can't to can, won't to will, just working on the positive, you know, what will it take? And just switching the mindset. There's so many people that think that the universe is against them versus the universe is for them. Just that, you know, mindset. And we, you know, all the backgrounds we've grown up in, all the negativity that we've heard, all everything that's been role modeled. If it's not working, then lip it and, you know, focus on
find your way and find your way.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, look, even if it was taught by your parents, sometimes that way isn't the best for you, for us, for me.
Right. Times are different. Times are different.
Yep. And so we have to look at things and figure out what that is. You know, I think it's important. I do. I think it's worth endeavoring into.
Yes.
I really do. You know, I always enjoy talking with you because giving people, well, you know, tinyhabits.com, we've talked about it before. People have mentioned it. Those of you who really have done the program and can share it with ideas, remember what we say about coaching. You know, doctors are coaches, nurses are coaches in different formulas, in different ways.
Yeah, it's different. The coach that's coaching the tennis match that's
yes, different
versus the coach that knows that you have all the answers.
Exactly.
And the onus is on us, the coach, to pull them out, pull up the right answer, not the right. Just pull up the answers that will help you meet your, you know,
exactly. Goals. We always say asking powerful questions is how we get there. Right. And sometimes you'll hear you'll hear dead air. It's so funny when you're talking to somebody and suddenly you'll ask a question.
A pregnant pause. Well, that means they're thinking.
And we like ego. That. Or sometimes they're like, well, what am I supposed to be doing? And I'll just go.
You tell me. What do you think? What do you think you could be doing?
Yeah.
What would be fun to do? What tiny little thing could you start doing and build on?
Mm-hmm. And that's where we start. The building blocks to living with chronic conditions are ever reaching higher than you think. Mm-hmm. And if you're willing and able to advocate for yourself and ask yourself questions and be asked questions to make things better, to shift it to a different way of thinking, of approaching things, I'm all there for it. I mean, I really am. I'm definitely on board for that, right?
Absolutely.
So Cindy has a marathon coming up soon, and that will be she gets together with her friends.
Have a blast. Yeah.
And that's the purpose of it. You know, absolutely. She's not running the New York Marathon for speed. She's not going to be passing those runners who just you know, those people who are super fast. No, I don't need to be with them. I need to admire them and enjoy and clap for them when they're doing well. And
celebrate,
especially when they beat their personal best when it's something like
PR,
that.
Personal record. Absolutely.
Yeah. But it's a personal record for you. So think about that, guys. You're looking for your own personal ways to do things and to ask questions. And we always want to be able to help you. So, Cindy, thank you again for stopping by. I'll have Cindy come back because she is a plethora, honestly, of great tools, tips. She's, as she said, she's forever learning, which is a wonderful aspect of looking at your life and going, there's always something I can learn more about.
Absolutely. And also, I don't know if you've encouraged people to write things down, date, time, questions, answers, follow-up, keeping a log. That is so valuable. And you can see, you know, all the progress you've made. And then you can also find out where the gaps are so you can circle back around and close the loop.
Yep. And seeing progress and seeing where the gaps are helps you. Really helps you. So on that note, we will get together and we'll talk about one of the other fabulous things that Cindy is learning about, because I'm always interested in growing. Have a great day. And Cindy, always a pleasure. Do you have a website or any way people can get in touch with you?
I have a...
it's a work in progress right now?
Yes, it's basically a work in progress, yes.
We'll keep you updated.
They can contact you if they want to contact me.
Yes, yeah. yes. And you know what? Even when we're coaches, we share. You know,
oh, absolutely.
There's a coach better
we have
for
our
somebody.
Own coaches, yeah.
Yep. And I never want you to feel like you don't have choice. Have a great day, and thank you again, Miss Cindy.
Certainly.
See you next week.
Okie dokie.